America and all of our listeners all over the world. You are listening to a pre-recession episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo Dinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Good day.
Hello.
We got a story about it that we're going to be talking about, but yeah, it kind of looks like we got a recession. People have been predicting one for a while now, but we got the first, like, red flag that one is almost definitely on the way. We'll be talking about that. We've lived through a couple of recessions in our lifetimes. They're not fun. They kind of suck, especially jobs. Unfortunately, I'm training for a job that's recession proof. So,
and the last one wasn't all that long ago either. It was like 11 years ago.
Yeah, we lived through it, and it sucked. But anyway, obviously that's not the only thing we're going to be talking about. Among some other stuff, we've also got one of the most infamous members of the House of Representatives putting his foot in his mouth again and showing that, no, he really can scrape the grime that is under the bottom of the barrel if you try hard enough. But we do have good news as well. And of course, there's more Trump shenanigans, specifically doing everything that they possibly can to just nakedly make themselves out to be the villain.
I mean, gotta get in there before the recession happens.
Yeah, indeed. And because, you know, if the Democrat wins the next election, we gotta get primed so we can blame it all on them. Mm-hmm. Also, Curt Schilling, former ball player and also the guy that managed to con the state of Rhode Island out of millions of dollars, he's considering a political career in Arizona. We'll tell you all about it. Also, Oscar Mayer now has a hot dog ice cream sandwich.
That is not okay.
That happened, and we all let it happen.
It is the end times, isn't it?
Yeah. But, in good news, Tool has finally gotten some actual chart recognition, the kind that, the kind that they've been sort of unjustifiably been robbed of for so long. We'll tell you how that happened. And, of course, we got some Netflix and movie stuff. And, a movie that was probably going to come out that was made by the guys who did The Purge. It's basically been shelved, and we're going to tell you why. But all that and more on this yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. So, we're having this episode. It's for August 16th, 2019. And to start us off, as always, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm continuing my trek through the Stormlight Archive. I'm in the second book now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's still really good. So, yeah, I'm not going to spend too much time there because it's a massive thing, and I wish that more people would get to read it, but it's one of those things that is just so incredibly huge that it's probably daunting to a lot of people.
It actually kind of hurts to lay it on your lap and try to read it.
Yeah.
It's that heavy.
Yeah, so I don't know, Kindle edition, Audible, whatever, it's those are a lot lighter and maybe more enjoyable, so give those a look. Apart from that, I've been doing some gaming here and there, mostly emulation stuff. I've been playing a lot of Genesis games for obvious reasons. Apart from that, well, I've been doing some forum and web stuff that just has been piling up lately, so it's been a lot of server maintenance and updates and stuff that I needed to get to, but I had been putting back. So, yay for IT stuff. Joy. that's been my week. How about you, Pat?
Site stuff, World Warriors. Got that first Killer Instinct update done last weekend.
Did you ever.
Yep, 211 indexed matches spanning four events. So I'd say that was a pretty good way to debut Killer Instinct in the archive, and it's getting some attention. So I'm excited about that, and I'm hoping to give Guilty Gear Accent Core and Blaze Blue Central Fiction similar debuts this weekend or shortly after. I've also got Virtua Fighter 5 Final Showdown from Evo already ready to start posting. So it should be a pretty good update this week.
Yeah.
That hasn't left me with much time for anything else, unfortunately.
Yeah, other than work, man, obviously. Yeah.
Hmm. All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I've been doing a good bit of watching. I watched the new Rocko's Modern Life movie that's on Netflix right now, and it's actually really quite good. So yeah, like the story-wise, they've been circling in space for 20 years. Then I guess they find out that the remote to get back to Earth has been stuck to Heifer's butt the entire time. So they have to get it out. And when they get back, they find out like a lot of shit has changed. There's things like the O-phone, a lot of other things, like, and especially kind of the thing that drives the plot is that the Fatheads are no longer on air. At that point, and I guess in the process of them getting back to O-Town, an accident occurs that causes Mr. Bighead, he's like doing his math stuff, like, I don't know what the way they kind of set it up, but he's like calculating their profit, and at some point something hits the calculator, it hits zero, he prints it out, and so when he goes to turn it in, it's like, well, we got no money, I guess. Somehow their system's so fragile. Someone putting a piece of paper with zeros on it causes them to lose all their money.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, they say like 95% of the town's economy is based around Conglamo, so they're like threatening to take down the entire town as well with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of gets to the point where they realize that maybe their one hope of saving the town is to bring back the Fatheads for a special episode, like 20-year anniversary episode kind of thing. And so, yeah, they have to go find Ralph, and some things happen with that. And, yeah, the show kind of ends up being all about change can be good with a little bit of, like, side-eye at the people that are mad at, like, the Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, ruining Star Wars' legacy, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Some stuff like that. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. A little special. It's not too long. It's like 45 minutes, so definitely worth checking out if you like the original show.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching Glow Season 3, which is really good. So I guess at the end of last season, they kind of struck a deal to have like a show in Vegas. So kind of they set that up, and kind of it being a Vegas show, like it's the same every day, so they focus a little bit less in most of the episodes on other things besides the wrestling itself. They do have a couple of bits where they do go focus on the show when they try different things with that, but a lot of the season's focused on sort of being in Vegas for like months on end and how that affects the different women and Bash and Sam and all that. It's a really good show. Kind of ends really nicely. In the way that sets them up for some cool stuff for season 4.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. It starts off really interestingly to kind of set the mood for like when that's the season takes place.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, I think the women who play Liberty Bell and Zoya are kind of on this show, hyping up the opening for the Vegas show. But it's also the same day that the Challenger explosion happens. And so since their characters are, you know, pro-U.S., pro-Russia, or Soviet Union, they're kind of talking shit about the Challenger, Zoya is, and sort of keeps doing it as they launch. Then the explosion happens, and she realizes,
after
continuing to talk shit, like, oh, shit, what just happened, kind of thing.
We call that heat, folks.
Yep. Yeah.
And, yeah, it kind of goes through it. It really kind of sets the stage that, like, that whole thing was kind of like the 80s version of, like, what happened with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So this horrific tragedy that happens that, you know, causes a lot of people just kind of be depressed.
Well, see, the thing you got to remember about the Challenger is that because one of the astronauts was a teacher, they had basically wheeled in a bunch of TV, like live feed for TV, for grade schools all over the country, which means that a bunch of kids in school saw the Challenger blow up.
Yeah. That was definitely one of those things where it was like this big event that everybody watched.
I remember and that shit.
Backfired big time.
Oh, that's putting it lightly.
Yeah. But yeah, that's like the first thing that kind of sets them off on the whole season, though. It's really only an issue for that first episode.
Because
they eventually kind of move past it and onto their own issues that are happening. So that season's really quite good. The only way it's a downgrade is for people that pretty much focus solely on the wrestling part of it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there's a lot of like characters progressing, relationships evolving and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And while I was on Netflix, I saw this other thing was on there. A new special came out, I think, a little while ago called Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster, comma, Frankenstein. which stars David Harbour of Stranger Things fame, who is doing this weird faux documentary about his father, David Harbour Jr., who was a famed actor in like the 70s and 80s and such. Did this weird TV play movie thing based on Frankenstein's Monster that was just really weird. Kind of trying to uncover like the conspiracies or whatever that happened around that play. It's really silly and dumb. It's not too long, it's like 40 minutes, so it's worth checking out if you like David Harbour and him doing just some weird character shit. But yeah, that's some good stuff that's on there. And been streaming this week. Did No Man's Sky on Sunday, kind of prepping for the Beyond update, kind of get back into it and seeing like what is No Man's Sky as of pre Beyond, and had a lot of fun with that. Then on Wednesday, Beyond was out, so we checked that out. Just a regular version, not the VR. That's going to be tomorrow, and yeah, they did a lot of big stuff to that game. Ended up starting up a new save because they revamped the tutorial at the beginning of the game. Pretty big time. And yeah, I'll probably talk more about it on Sunday as far as like a lot of the things they did. But yeah, there's a lot of quality of life stuff in there. Like previous versions of No Man's Sky, you had a lot of inventory management. As far as like you could have a stack of like 250 of like oxygen elements or carbon or nitrogen, that sort of stuff. And here they've kind of gotten rid of that limit. So it's just a stack that just gets bigger. There are specific items that do have stack limits, but they're like the stuff that's like more rare things that you're probably not going to want to, that they don't really want you to have, tons of them just to kind of balance the economy a little bit better. And yeah, they just revamp the UI for like the inventory stuff, because before you have like the picture of your exosuit backpack and you have to go and click on specific little circles on it to go to the other alternate inventory spots. There's one for technology, so you can put your upgrades there to save some room on the main space for just elements and materials you get. And the other one was a cargo pack that had like double, that would double the stack size you could get. So if it was 250 in the main stack, it would be 500 there. So you put your like more common stuff that you want to use all the time. Stuff like that, that they kind of revamped a good bit. They changed like the way you report names and such of discoveries you have. Which is good in some ways, not so great in others. But yeah, the way that all looks a lot nicer. So yeah, that was a big big upgrade. Did have one issue where I got to the social area called the Space Anomaly, which in the previous versions was just kind of smallish area. You could talk to like two dudes to report your findings and such. Here it's like a big social area, kind of on par with like what Destiny has with the tower, that sort of thing. But here, as far as I could tell, you can't like see the usernames of the other people. I just saw them running around and couldn't really interact with them. But I had some weird bugs where it just crashed on occasion with that stuff. So I was constantly like just going to talk to somebody and running back to my ship to initiate a save, that sort of thing. But then I also have issues where I couldn't talk to people. You'd hold square to fill up the meter to talk to somebody, and it just wouldn't go into the talking. You let go, and just the bar just unfills. It's like really weird stuff that happens. So I ended up just, and that stranger's like, "All right, we're done with this area because we don't want this to crash anymore." Just went back to some of the planets to explore and all that, and that's where I found no real issues from then on. So they're putting out some fixes, some bugs, bug fixes out over these last few days. So they're definitely getting working on that stuff. But yeah, the other thing I streamed on Tuesday was PC Building Simulator, the PS4 version specifically, which is really quite good. And I likened it to a game like House Flipper, in terms of it kind of being a checkbox game, where you kind of get these jobs that you do, and you just, all right, I'll do this thing. It's on the list of things they want me to do for this PC. I get that done, then you move to the next thing, and it's like, okay, now you got to just plug in the USB cables, HDMI power cables to check that it boots correctly. It's like, all right, we're done. You know, pick it up, put it in the spot you ship it out in, just collect it from the email. It's like, all right, we're done. Pretty kind of low-key, chill kind of game. That you can kind of play and just have a podcast on or Netflix or whatever and just have fun. And, yeah, that game is just a lot of fun. And it's kind of a good way to kind of learn more about PCs and components. And if you haven't really put together your own PC, it kind of should help people learn that they're not that as complicated as it used to be like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The sort of thing, a lot more plug and play kind of thing. Then we, and Phil was on in the chat for that, as well as a couple other people, which was fun. We went to the free build mode, which they have all the stuff unlocked for you. So we tried to build the most expensive PC we could, which had a water-cooled system that I thought mostly I got right, but then you kind of see some of the issues with the way they have things set up, where it's like, it doesn't like tell you like what all the parts you need for that, and like how you put them together and all that sort of stuff. So it's like, having never done that, there are a couple parts like, wait, what? How does this work? Sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it could use a little bit of extra helpful hints on that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Well, you actually get some of that, some more of that in the career.
Yeah.
Like, it does take you through most of that out in there, but.
Yeah. But that's, it seems like from what I've played so far, where I'm like halfway through the first month, I'm still getting people just like, upgrade my graphics card. I need 16 gigs of RAM. Which also, like, so Phil, usually if you get 16 gigs of RAM, you're getting 2 8 gig sticks, right?
Yeah, usually, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, well, here
I'm feeling
kind
of called out here.
Well, like, when I go into Newegg, it's like, that's usually what it is. Like, you want 16 gigs, it's 2 8s.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, just to fill up those two spots on your motherboard. Here, it's all just, you know, just get the one 16 gig stick, which works, but I think usually, like,
yeah,
the better.
You really do that.
Yeah. It's like, usually,
you
kind of want to mirror
channel.
That. Yeah. Which you can get the quad channels and kind of double up that way. And it's supposed to just make it run a little bit smoother, just having it even the load, I guess. And here, kind of, well, the game itself is all set in the UK.
Yeah.
And so, like, the prices on graphics cards don't make sense, from just what I know. Like a lot of the ones I'm dealing with, that it's like 1070s and stuff like that, they're like $200. It's like, I don't think it's that cheap. It's
not that cheap yet.
It's like they just turned the pound signs into dollar signs.
Yeah,
that's so maybe exactly that explains what they did. It. And it's like, you guys probably should have just, you know, maybe had something that did a proper, you know, translation of that to the right money. Hmm. Instead of just, we just changed the symbols. That's way easier. But yeah, that's kind of just skews some of my views on that. But yeah, we had problems with that water-cooled system, which I don't know if it was the only problem I had was just I didn't put the coolant on there.
Mm-hmm.
That might have solved it, but we ended up just ripping that out and putting the closed system.
Yeah.
It's just all nice and plug-and-play
yeah.
kind of thing, which worked. I think that system was like $5,700.
Yeah.
The case was really cool, though. Though it was kind of like a sort of minimalist like entertainment center. Like you just flip that on its side.
Yeah.
That's like three plates of glass kind of thing. You just flip that on its side. It's kind of like that. Or there's kind of the middle board is like where you plug in all your components to it. And the case is just these two other sides. And it's like all open other than those three parts. It's like really weird.
Yeah. I like the look of it. I mean.
Yeah. But I'm also like, all the dust is going straight to the components on this. You're not protecting it from anything. And hopefully you're not a slob that makes a mess or anything, because you're not. But the neat thing is, like, you can build a PC and then use that as your, like, work PC in there.
Yeah.
You can just go right to your desk, pull out the other one and put that one in, probably sell the parts for some money back. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. I think some of their tutorial stuff could be a little bit better.
Yeah.
Just to make it easier to not mess things up in a way. So, yeah, like just jumping into putting together like that water-cooled system was like, okay, I have no idea how these things actually work because I didn't even put the fluid in there until I tried to start it up. Because it's just like, well, it's probably already in there, isn't it? It's like, no.
Nope.
But you can pick like the different colors for the tubing, for the fluid itself, that sort of stuff, which, and there's RGB stuff in there as well. And you have one of the tools you can install from your USB stick is literally just for messing with the lighting and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You also get like Razer mouse and keyboards that can also have that same sort of thing, or you can just set it like rainbow, just go through all the colors sort of thing, which that stuff is all... It's cool, but like the mouse and keyboards doesn't really matter in the game.
Yeah.
Because you're just interacting with the monitor itself to do anything. So it's just purely cosmetic stuff, which, yeah, sure, that's like why you got some of that stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it's also pretty cool that 3D Mark is in there.
Yeah.
You just run that.
At least a video of it.
Yeah. That tries to emulate like what the system that you have like would run this thing at, which even that $5,700 PC I built still was like 30 FPS on some of those parts. Which I don't know if those are just supposed to be super overwhelming.
Yeah, a couple of those sections are, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird, but it gives you a score, which I assume is probably pretty accurate. But yeah, like there's in your main shop, you have like three tables you can build as you level up. So you can kind of have three systems you're working on at once. You can like, all right, this one has to run 3D Mark, so I'll just get that going and I'll move over to this next one and get started on that sort of thing. Cause that 3D Mark takes like a good few minutes.
Yeah.
The virus scanner stuff is, ridiculous cause it takes you like 5 seconds to scan and it's like, all right, kill him. Done. All right, we're good. It's like, I wish never had past that. It's never gone that fast, especially because all these PCs are relatively modern. Not super high end, but stuff that's been put out in the last few years, 5 years probably.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not my grandma's PC that was built like 10 years ago that runs slower than probably.
That's what I want them to do in the an upcoming update is the jank as fuck. PCs.
Just the grandma's computer date, where it's the old people sending you their PC that has Windows 7 on it,
Windows
and you're supposed to So here's Windows 7. You have to get Pogo working again. try to figure out how to install Flash or this other stuff, and it's like, oh, God. Here's Chrome. Just don't play the things it says it needs Flash. This is way easier than whatever you're trying to ask me to do. Because I don't have the money to get you a PC that can play anything. Mm. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun. It's on sale right now for the first week. And yeah, as a game people should check out, just as if they want to kind of a chill kind of simulation game.
All right.
And that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, I am still playing Fire Emblem. I'm now midway through my second playthrough with a different house. I actually got to that point in the story where it does the 5-year time skip. And overall, just, God, I freaking love this game. I really do. I love how it has, like, this amazing characterization and how, story-wise, there's a lot of, like, story and world-building. But it's all, like, all specifically focused on what route that you're taking. It doesn't club you over the head with unnecessary information. Depending, you know, unless you actually seek it out. Especially when it comes to stuff, because, like, I mentioned earlier, I did my first three playthrough with the Black Eagles and Edelgard, and I mentioned that they actually do have the shortest campaign in the game. It's only about 17 chapters. Whereas with the other two, it actually is longer, and the reason is because there are other factions you have to deal with. And this is especially true with the Golden Year House, because since the Lester Alliance isn't actually like a kingdom or an empire, but it's like an alliance of like autonomous fiefdoms or whatever you want to call it, with like a council of nobles at the head of it. It means that there are parts where you basically have to try and go, you know, you have to like put down parts of the alliance that are deciding that they want to say side with the empire, you know, because there's like these two big factions within the alliance that builds up after the time skip. There's the anti-imperial faction, which is, you know, led by Claude, the, you know, everybody's favorite brown dream boy. If you've seen anybody who plays that game. And then there's the pro-imperial faction, which is led by this other guy. I can't remember what his name is. I haven't gotten to fight him yet, but that's just like it extends the length of that particular part of the game. But other than that, getting back into J-Rock, and I've been listening to plenty of Sound Horizon. You guys familiar with Sound Horizon?
I've heard good things about them, but I haven't actually been able to check them out.
Have you heard of Linked Horizon?
No.
Have you heard the original theme for Attack on Titan?
Probably
once.
That's
Linked Horizon.
Okay.
The guy who's the head of the group is called, God, what's his name? Revo. And if you
play, I know that name.
Yeah, if you played Bravely Default, you know him because he composed a lot of the music for that game as well. But basically what Sound Horizon is it is a, they call themselves the fantasy rock band, and it's because it's primarily a project that's mostly revolves around Revo. He's like the primary composer and sort of the writer and the director of the project, and there's like a couple of like sort of reoccurring people involved that come and get it. And basically every Sound Horizon album is basically a rock opera. With like that uses like all different kinds of music. It's not just limited to one particular. It goes from like, you know, symphonic metal to J-rock to techno to medieval folk music to like Russian sounding folk music. They do all kinds of stuff, and they put on these like lavish stage productions where they present the entire piece like a theatrical piece. And if you ever get a chance, it is freaking amazing to watch, because Revo himself, he only recently started like getting actively involved in the stage side. He's much more out front now, but in the past, he would mostly just be in with the band in the corner, you know, doing the music and everything. If you ever get a chance, watch some of the stuff that they've done on YouTube. There's this one particular, because I cannot remember what the name of it is, but it's from a concert, the encore they did for a concert at JCB Hall, and it's about the Reconquista. It's freaking awesome. There's this one guy who he's with him called Ike Nelson, who's this guy from, I guess he's originally, he's this big, bald, black guy from the Midwest, I think, or New York. And his basic purpose is he is the guy who provides, like, the epic English narration. Like, you know that when you play, like, a Soul Calibur game and there's that random bit of narration that comes at the beginning of each fight?
Yeah.
It sounds like that. And it sounds just about as nonsensical. It's freaking amazing. Other than that, anime. I went into my old DVD collection. I pulled out the box set I had for Gunbusters. You guys have never heard of Gunbusters? Gunbusters is the anime that Gainax made that kind of defined what Gainax would become. Like, they had already made another movie called Wings of Anamize, which is a good movie, but that's not typically the type of thing you associate with Gainax. And, you know, it's a Hideaki Anno production with all that entails.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's an OVA series. And there's like, I think like 5 episodes. And it basically just is a grab bag of just about every anime trope they could come up with. But then they bring in the reality of, like, time dilation and space travel, which suddenly makes the whole thing a lot darker on the surface. It's an amazing anime. It really is. It starts out like every classic Gainax piece. It starts out kind of silly and bubbly, and then by the end it is, well, a Gainax piece.
Depressing nightmare fuel.
Yeah, kinda.
Or just general mindfuckage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, anyone got anything they want to add before we move on?
Yeah, I forgot to mention, because I'm still kind of traumatized. Yeah, I started to dive into the Warhammer 40K universe.
Oh, you poor sweet summer child.
So that was a thing.
Yeah, there is no hero in 40K.
No.
It's
there's only
just assholes and lesser assholes and greater assholes.
Yeah.
It's a universe of assholes, and the only thing that results is you get shit on.
Yeah. So,
like, they kind of had a somewhat good faction with the Tau for a while, but they decided, no, we can't do that. We got to add some part of evil to it. So
yeah, well, the Tau have asses for faces, so
yeah,
that's nice.
But okay then. Well, with that being said, it is now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's random factoid. So, you know, I grew up in the 90s, late 80s to, you know, the 90s, like pretty much everyone here. And in our day when we were kids, you know, obviously we didn't have DVDs. DVDs were kind of a thing that kind of started to happen, you know, during our tweens and our teenage years. So before that, we had VHS tapes. And the thing about VHS tape, well, of course, unless you're Phil, in which case you're older and you also remember things like Beta.
Yeah. I remember that.
We had a conversation about that today at work.
Yeah. Betamax, Laserdisc, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff. Anyway, so I don't know about any of you guys, but obviously one of the things that people, everyone went to, if you went to the grocery store, there was always that little aisle sort of kiosk in the middle where they would sell VHS tapes, right? Mm-hmm. And they were usually at something of a discount, you know? And this was also during the high times, the heyday of what we call the Disney Renaissance. You know, it began with The Little Mermaid, and, you know, then went on with Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, The Lion King, Hercules, Hunchback of Notre Dame, all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if this ever happened to you guys, but did you ever go into one of those kiosks, and you look there, and you found a VHS tape with a cover that kind of sort of looked like it would be the cover for a Disney movie? But it wasn't?
Yes.
Like, they would just sort of modify the character art and the logo just enough so that it technically wasn't a complete and blatant ripoff of the Disney cover art, but it was totally a blatant Disney ripoff cover art.
Yeah, but if you were, like, 10 feet away from it, you wouldn't be able to tell.
Yeah, I swear, there are so many parents and grandparents who got fooled into buying that shit.
Mm.
So much so that I'm pretty sure Disney eventually came down hard on them and bankrupted a lot of those studios.
Think so.
Yeah, so there was a couple of those studios. There was, Good Times Entertainment, which featured animation from studios like Jetlag, Kids Inc. And of course, this kind of bullshit didn't end with the VHS era. Later on, you know, you'd end up with companies like Video Brinquedo or Sparkplug Entertainment, who would put out like really shitty ripoffs of like popular 3D animated films that came out around that time.
Hell, I sold some of them during my Walmart days.
Yeah. But I'm not going to be talking about that particular, any of those particular, I'm going to be talking about another particular company I want to talk about, because being that, you know, we're with Smashpad and we're primarily a video game, you know, a video game website, the particular company I want to talk about today is infamous not only because of how shitty their garbage ripoffs were, but the weird way that they tried to release them over in the Western world. I'm talking about a little company out of Germany called Dingo Pictures. Now, you're thinking, okay, so how the hell does this relate to video games? Well, Dingo Pictures back in the day had a deal with two different companies. One was Midas Interactive, which I think some of us may be familiar with. Probably the one title they put out that was any good was Dynasty Warriors 2. They were the ones who localized it. And the other one is Phoenix Games, a.k.a. the king of bottom-of-the-barrel bargain bin dollar store crap. Now, I want to be clear. Again, these films from Dingo Pictures, they were not games. They were movies. And yet, for most people, especially over here in the West, the only way you could get a hold of them was through the PS2. Because they released them as PS2 titles. Now, how were they able to get away with this? Well, you know how, like, back in the day when DVDs first became a thing for children, and I'm kind of sure they still kind of do this, they would usually have, like, bonus features that would be, like, you know, games or quizzes. Yes,
Easter eggs,
puzzles, that kind of thing. Well, that's how Dingo and, you know, Midas and Phoenix were able to justify putting these things on the PS2, because there would be the regular movie, and then there would be these shitty quote-unquote games that went with it. And almost invariably, they were basically the same three or four goddamn one, which was a thing where you could quote-unquote paint on some of the animation frames. In reality, it was just a flood fill. Two, which was matching, you know, memory card matching, which when you did the whole thing, it would reveal, again, another one of the shitty frames from their shitty movie.
Mm-hmm.
And three, a slide puzzle. Without fail, always those three things. And you could usually tell whether it was a more recent one, more recent release, because then they would actually add gradients into the graphics for some of these movies that didn't exist in the actual movie. So there's a couple of different films that Dingo Pictures put out that have become, shall we say, infamous. Probably the one that's probably one of the first most infamous is Lion and the King. Now, can you take a wild guess at what this is supposed to be a ripoff of?
No, not a clue.
Gee, I wonder.
Well, first of all, it's actually a sequel. Because it's actually supposed to be a sequel to another movie they had made, which was supposed to be a more direct ripoff of the original Lion King. And the thing is, that makes no goddamn sense when you actually watch it, because that other movie never got an English translation. So there's literally like this starting point, and there's these two identical twin weasels going stuff like, "There was a silence in the jungle again, and you remember how the evil Black Panther was driven off into the desert for trying to take over the kingdom." And it's like, no, I don't remember any of this. What the hell are you talking about? And then, you know, there's like a guy who's supposed to be like a Mufasa character, and he is straight up a trace of Simba from The Lion King, adult Simba. Like, it is not even trying to hide it. And then there's the little kid. I can't remember what his name is, because the thing is, another thing about Dingo movies is they tended to reuse a lot of their assets depending on what movie they had. So the little Lion Cub character gets like three different names depending on what you're watching him in. Basically, he is a really shit trace of Cub Simba. Only his nose is drawn really badly, so it looks like he has an ass on his face. And then there's a crocodile friend that he has that, I'm not joking, is named Dundee. And like the whole plot is that he comes across with this guy, this little panther cub named Mew Mew, who is supposed to be the cub of the evil Black Panther. Yes, he's also in this movie, and he's got like this weird scheme where he wants to take over the jungle by hoarding all of these diamonds. It makes no sense, and there's like this. Also, you need to know, all of the voice actors that you have here are the original German voice actors for the original German version, but they're speaking in English for the English translation, which means that both the cadence of the way they're speaking and the emotion they try to put on it in is just all different degrees of off.
Yeah, because some of them don't actually speak English.
Yeah, and some of the shit gets lost in translation, and there's also like these weird pauses and stuff in the editing. It's really uncanny and bizarre. I actually recommend, if you ever get a chance, because all of these movies I'm talking about here, actually most of them you can actually watch on YouTube, because Dingo themselves went bankrupt, and I think sometime in like 2008 or something. Although their website is still around, weirdly enough. So there's that movie. The other infamous they put out is they did a Pocahontas movie right around the time when that other Disney movie came out. And it almost does like almost the letter follows the original of the Disney movie. It's not even close. I mean, it's not, they are not even trying to hide it. And the funny thing is, it's actually one of their earlier movies, and they actually and when they first started out with the earlier movies, they actually tried to have songs. But the thing is, with the exception of like one on there, all the other songs, and there's like three of them, have it where, like, the audio is, there's the German audio that you can hear, the original German audio that you can hear underneath, but the English dub is also on top of it. Yeah. Also, Pocahontas is the Pocahontas movie is important in Dingo in the Dingo world because it's also the movie where they previewed the character that kind of became like their signature. Do you guys remember the raccoon character from the Pocahontas movie?
Yeah.
They have him here too, except they whitened out the dark part around his eyes and they gave him the name Wabu. And Wabu is, well, first of all, for some reason he hops around like a kangaroo because I guess they couldn't animate it otherwise. And he starts up this torrid romance with this white cat that he meets that was like the cat of like the captain of the colony or whatever is now, I think. And the guy, by the way, if you remember in the original Pocahontas movie, there's the guy who's the head of the colony, the big broad dude with the mustache and everything. Yeah. He's in this movie too, but his name is Mr. Crunchbone.
For reason.
Also, the colony in this movie doesn't look like an Elizabeth, like a early American colony at all. It looks like a it looks like an old West town that just sprung up overnight. So that's another one. Also, there Wabu also got his own movie, and that one is also particularly infamous for the fact that it wasn't dubbed by the original German voice actors. It was by because it was released by another company called East West, and the thing about the dubs they did for the foreign country, they only had two people. It was this old Dutch guy, and I'm guessing was supposed to be his son. And neither one of them speaks English very well.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of blandly reading from a script. And I'm pretty sure they do the whole thing in like one take because there are parts in it where you can hear them like turning the pages in the script.
Yeah.
And, like actually accidentally reading parts from the script.
Yeah, the stage direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And that movie's particularly infamous because there's a part where Wabu is trying to like help a squirrel named Wooshaw to get across a stream because, you know, he's getting storing up nuts for the winter. And in the process, he accidentally, one, topples a tree that has a bird's nest in it with eggs in it, so that when it falls over, the birds accuse him of being a child murderer. And I'm using those exact words.
Okay.
Hardcore.
And at the same time, he also accidentally manages to crush Wooshaw under the tree.
Nice.
So that's like the third. And the fourth and final one I'll very briefly discuss is probably the other movie, and arguably the one that's the most infamous because it's the dub that most everyone has come across with. And it's a movie that's called Animal Soccer World. Do you guys remember that movie Bed Knobs and Broomsticks?
Yes.
Remember the part where they have the soccer game with the cartoon animals?
Yeah.
Did you ever have you guys also watched Animal Olympics?
That I haven't seen, no. But
the cartoon from the late 70s. Not the Laugh Olympics, it was another. Whatever. Anyway, the point is, they decided to get, like, all the characters from the old Dingo movies and have them have a little soccer match. And I'm not going to really spoil it. Just watch it on YouTube. You can, but it's bad. I mean, it's really, really
bad. It sounds like all of this is bad.
There's, like, a constant, like, kind of hum just underneath the regular audio.
Oh.
And there's, like, this cartoon duck who's supposed to be a nurse. And every time she enters into the frame, she's, like, trying to make the sound of, like, a European siren from, like, an ambulance. But she's not really good at doing it, so it always comes out like it sounds like somebody's, like, wiping a window or something, you know. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, he agrees. But, yeah, so that's Dingo Pictures. That's only four of the just mountain of shit that they managed to put out while they existed. If you ever do ever get curious, do yourself a favor, go on YouTube and watch them. They're a laugh at just how terrible they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Cool.
And now you have your homework for the weekend.
Yeah.
Now, with that out of the way, it's now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week for this week is none other than Iowa Representative Steve do, while at a quote-unquote pro-life event, while he was putting forth advocation for that one of those zero-tolerance abortion bills, he basically pondered openly out in front of God and everybody, on tape, on camera, whether or not there'd be any population left if it were not for rape and incest.
Yeah. Yeah, the specific quote is, what if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled those people out that were products of rape and incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that?
Well, that's a hell of a cherry pick because, you know, if you remove that person, then someone else will likely take their place in the gene pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and continues on, considering all the wars and all the rapes and pillages taking place and whatever happened due to culture and whatever happened to culture after society, I know I can't certify that I'm not a part of a product of that.
I don't even understand what he's trying to say.
This is one of those instances where out of context it sounds awful, and in context it's even fucking worse.
Yeah.
For the record, Steve King at this point is virtually powerless. He's basically been – he's had all of, like, his committee assignments taken away from him.
He still gets paid, though.
Yeah, pretty much all he does is he gets paid to sit behind a desk.
Yeah.
He has that, and he has one vote, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take a wild guess that he's probably going to lose the next election. I would say that, but he also won a re-election in 2018, so – yeah,
no, don't take it for granted. Yeah.
So, Steve King is – this is just like the latest in a long line of really stupid, awful gaffes that Steve King has put out that basically show him to be the horribly racist, misogynistic scumbag that he is. If you remember, the last big hullabaloo was when he openly opined on Twitter why white nationalism suddenly became a dirty word.
Yeah. Oh, it's that guy.
Yeah, and yep. That's him. This is him.
Yeah, this just is. Just add a new quote to the list.
Yeah.
Add a new quote to the wiki page.
Yeah. He is just. I would like to say that he's more racist than most, but well, look who's currently sitting in the Oval Office right now.
Yeah.
I would say he's probably the most openly racist.
Well, he's the one person who's not smart enough to try and hide it.
Oh, he still gets elected, so I don't know that he's been punished for it yet.
Not yet, but they still. I mean, pretty much after that, he basically, for all intents and purposes, became persona non grata.
Yeah.
Really, it's we're gonna see where this goes from here, but I mean, at this point, he. You know, after that last flub, there's really no – I really did not think you could go any lower, but apparently you can.
Oh, yeah. It's a John Oliver thing where he's like, look up there, way in the sky. Right up there. You can see it. That's rock bottom. Yeah. We're down here. And that was like around – that was before the election. Yeah. That's when he was saying that shit. And it's like, yeah, we've gone way further below that.
Yeah.
We've not found the obsidian layer at the bottom of the world yet.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine a lot of him getting reelected is just they know the name.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. You, that's true. Mm. Unfortunately, there is a large part of the American electorate that will only vote for someone depending on the letter that comes after their name on the ballot.
That's a great way to do things.
Run a country, yeah.
It's like my life has not changed yet. So here's the incumbent. We're going to pick him.
Yeah. Anyway. But we do have our heroes of the week. And the heroes of our week, our hero of the week is science. Because this week, science, specifically medicinal science, have discovered what could possibly two drugs, not one, but two drugs, that could be the cure for Ebola.
Yep.
Which is a very nasty disease.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically right now it's kind of a 50-50 shot of whether you survive it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And these two new drugs that they have been putting through trials in Congo, I think, they have determined they give you about an 89 to 94% chance of survival.
Yeah, that's a bit better.
Yes. And yeah, kind of this article is just kind of about how even in the worst of circumstances where they could use the drug right away, that you kind of still need to go through the trial process just to make sure it does what it's supposed to and doesn't have any ill effects to it.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Like they could have, you know, easily have let the market dictate that they should get it out right away.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing that medicine should be doing is pricing or rushing things out because the market demands it, which is what we have here in the U.S.
Yeah.
That's why things like insulin is way higher here than it is in Mexico or Canada.
Or anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah. Hmm. But yeah, it's that sort of system that, like, yeah, you don't need capitalism in medicine.
No.
No.
That's the worst way to do it.
Thank Bush Sr. for that one.
Yeah. Sadly. Yeah, but, yeah, so this is great news. Now we got to find, you know, now it's just a matter of, you know, who are the bottom feeders that are going to scrabble after the scraps. Anyway. All right, so with that out of the way, it's now time to start the proper show proper. And we start with the first big story of the week, which is that child rapist and child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein basically killed himself in his jail cell last weekend. Wink, wink.
Yeah, which got all the crazies excited on Twitter. Because they could start creating their own conspiracy theories about this stuff.
I mean, let's be honest here. If there was not a one, if there cannot be another inmate in the United States at more at risk than Jeffrey Epstein.
It's true.
Yeah,
and yet somehow these guys managed to flub this so badly.
Oh yeah, federal prison.
Yeah,
guards were not paying attention.
Nope.
So those guys got put on like indefinite vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I think the warden also got sent somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff happened to had to happen.
So they actually took him off of suicide watch.
Mm. Yeah.
Which, for the record, I don't know if any of you have ever had any friends or family members or friends of family members who have ever been in jail before, but suicide watch is kind of, well, it fucking sucks. You're basically in a room where one of the walls is clear glass and you're watched all of the time. And there's nothing in – they put nothing in there that you could even possibly think of coming up with to use to hurt yourself. And basically his attorneys had found a way to convince them to take him off suicide watch. And then 2 days later he was dead.
So when he came out of suicide watch, what happened? Did they put him in general or
–
Yeah, I don't know what the specifics were.
Because you do know what happens to people like Jeff Epstein in prison.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, he I'm pretty sure they put him in max sec. So, but the thing is, you know, when they found him, basically he had wrapped – I can't remember what it is that he had wrapped around his neck and then, you know, hung it off the top, you know, the top bunk in his cell and – something like that. The autopsy report says that there were several fractures in his neck, which would suggest that something else happened between then and when his time of death. There's like so many things that had to go wrong for this to happen, and they all did.
Yeah.
Which is why people are so completely suspicious.
Yeah.
Like, it seems almost too perfect. That many people had to be that god-awful at their job for that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's, man, I really don't know what else to put there, but,
yeah. Kind of the worst thing about it is just the victims, get the worst of it because they get no justice for what happened to them.
Well, the thing is that there are now plans going forth that they're actually going to sue his estate, which was quite large, as I'm sure you could imagine. But his attorneys are doing everything they can to have that not happen.
Yeah, yeah, but the money is not as important as being able to, like, tell him yourself to fuck off. Essentially,
also they recently raided Pedophile Island, so we're gonna find out what they found there. He actually, for those who don't know, Epstein actually had a couple of different islands, but the one I'm talking about is the one that's probably most infamous. There's already been a few people that have been named being associated with him. Former Governor Bill Richardson, the scientist, I forgot what his name is. And of course,
one of the princes.
Yeah, Prince Andrew, I think it is. And of course, both Bill Clinton and Donald J. Trump have both been named as well. Though it should be said that the woman who has basically her charges she's brought forth have been like one of the big foundations for the case. She says that she's claimed that although she's seen both Bill Clinton and Donald Trump go to that area, she says she never saw them do anything improper. So
make of it what you will.
Yeah.
Just because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
I mean, it didn't happen. Yeah. That was just for sake of fairness. But he's dead. And if there is a hell, he is currently roasting in the deepest, dankest part of it right now.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think he's stuck in purgatory because I don't think even Satan wants him there.
Or this is the other conspiracy theory I've heard, is that he's not actually dead. They faked his death and put him and, like, you know, flew him out onto, like, a private island somewhere.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Considering the way that this story has been unfolding, can you honestly look in your heart and say, there is absolutely no way I could believe that not happening?
At this point, anything is possible.
Yeah. All right. So, next story. Flint, Michigan. You guys remember Flint, Michigan, right?
Yeah. The big water crisis.
Yeah. Also, Michael Moore made his first. So they're still having that lead and water thing still going on. Now they got another person to add, another town, Newark. Newark, New Jersey, now has its own little lead crisis going on with its water.
Wonderful.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what the levels were, but they've started sending out water bottles to people to help them out, get them filters, all that sort of stuff. Only those residents served by the city's Pequannock water treatment plant who have received filters because they have lead service lines will be able to pick up water, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only people in specific areas that are affected.
I'm just wondering, in planning this water system, who thought using lead pipes was a good idea?
Oh, it's people back
probably
in
that
the,
old.
Yeah. Early 1900s.
Yeah, I guess.
Where it's like, yeah, lead's fine, whatever.
It's metal. It doesn't rust, so yeah, let's use that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now it's a lot of these houses have it, and getting it out of there is expensive and takes time.
Yeah. And let's be honest, and if you know anything about the way our state governments work down here in the United States, is that they are stingy as all fuck.
Yeah, it's not paid to make this not an issue more quickly than just wishing it goes away. We'll just put filters in, and that'll solve the issue.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
We'll just pay some private contractor to do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's still issues with people that have lead paint on their houses.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, governments, there is a fund for that, but it's not as big and easy to use as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget asbestos.
Oh, yeah.
We still got a problem with that, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I used to live in an apartment with asbestos and lead paint, so that was awesome.
So it's like, let's set fire to this.
That is tipped in God, dude. Like, seriously. All right. But yeah, so yeah. Moving on from there, Martha McSally, who is a GOP senator, has drafted a bill that is going to make domestic terrorism a federal crime. Which I am surprised.
Why the actual crucified fuck was it not already?
It's a loophole in the law that prevents federal authorities from specifically punishing domestic terrorism. That's basically what they're proposing to close with this bill. She said, domestic terrorism is in our backyard, and we need to call it and treat it under the law the same as other forms of terrorism.
And this is a GOP senator.
Yeah. In Arizona.
Like, wow. Even... Yeah. That's how bad it's gotten, people.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I'm glad it's happening.
It's just surprising.
Yeah.
That's what I'm feeling here. It's like,
well,
whoa.
That's kind of, that's just sort of how messed up federalism in the United States is. Because we put so much weight on the concept of states' rights that we're willing to circle around any issue it takes as long as we can somehow find a compromise, even if it's one as ass backwards as what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Yeah.
No. All right, now we're in the Trump dump. First story. The Trump administration has announced new rules so that they can further restrict legal immigration.
Yep.
Like, at this point, they're not even trying to hide it.
Nope.
No, so this would deny green cards to migrants who use Medicaid, food stamps, housing vouchers, or other forms of public assistance, which I believe, based on the numbers, the amount of those people are far less than naturalized citizens that use it, and those born here as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is not really an issue.
No.
It's
except
not
the people
an issue.
Who think... brown people using any sort of public assistance here is bad. It's like, that's the whole point, is people that need it can use this. And not everybody that comes to this country is lucky enough to have money that gets them, you know, in a good place right away.
Yeah. And just to sort of put it forth, that they're not even trying to use any more dog whistles anymore. The current acting director of the USCIS, Ken Cuccinelli.
Yep.
Went out.
He's still in politics?
Yes, he's still there.
Fucking hell.
And he went out in front and he decided to add some additional sentences to the famous poem on the Statue of Liberty. Now, you guys are familiar with that poem, right?
Oh, yeah.
I will just very quickly go ahead and read it for you. It's not a terribly long poem, but it is one that is filled with depth. It goes like this. It's called The New Colossus, and it was written by Emma Lazarus, who was a Jewish civil rights activist and a labor agitator. She wrote, "Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land." They're referencing the Colossus of Rhodes, if you don't know what that is. "Here at our sea-washed sunset gate shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities fret. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp," cries she with silent lips. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me, for I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Got a lot of meaning to Americans, as you can probably guess.
Yep.
Because it expresses an ideal that we are supposed to hold dearly. But at this point, it's become clear that the Trump administration and their sycophants no longer believe in it.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Cuccinelli decided to add little pieces to that poem, saying, for example, "Give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge."
Yeah, he said the plaque was put on the Statue of Liberty at almost the same time as the first public charge was passed. Very interesting timing. And I guess
yeah,
CNN
fuck
here
you, dude.
Followed up on this to ask him about this. And he's like, I was answering a question. I wasn't writing poetry, Aaron. Don't change the facts. You're twisting this like everybody else on the left has done all day today.
Motherfucker, the context makes it even worse.
And he goes on to add it, add some more context. Of course, that poem was referring back to people coming from Europe where they had class-based societies, where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. And it was written 1 year after the first federal public charge rule was written.
See where I said they're not even using dog whistles anymore?
Nope. It's just...
Yeah, I think I saw
that. See, all of that that he just said, specifically, it excludes, well, for one thing, my Scotch-Irish ancestors. There's also the Chinese workers, the Japanese, the various African people, both enslaved and free. The people who lived in east of the Rio Grande when it was still Mexico, and just a whole number of groups. So again, not even hiding it anymore.
No. And yeah, I saw a good tweet from the Racism Watchdog on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It just has a ton of barks retweeting this particular statement about the poem being about people coming from Europe. It's like, you didn't even need that to know that what he said was racist.
Just, wow.
Like I said, just not even trying.
Yeah. At this point, it's like they just don't give a fuck anymore. It's like,
I mean, we already should have known this when Stephen Miller went out front and said that that plaque was added after the Statue of Liberty was constructed. And basically already giving like a big fucking signal of what this administration was going to do. And we should have gotten a hold of that back then. And we did. We actually talked about that back on this very show. So on the one hand, I am, of course, extremely furious. And on the other hand, I'm so pissed off that so many people somehow think that this just came out of the fucking blue.
Yeah, writing was on the wall for this one for a long time.
Now, very briefly, I also want to bring something up, because the thing about this is whenever you try to talk to one of these sycophants, they'll often bring up the immigration standards of Canada. Now, Phil, being that your family were Italian immigrants to Canada, exactly what are the actual standards that you have to go through to immigrate to Canada to become a citizen?
That's actually changed quite a bit since that happened.
Yeah.
Currently, it's actually a lot more stringent than it used to be.
Yeah.
You need to have a job lined up,
mm-hmm.
for one thing. You need to come into the country with no debt.
Yeah.
And there's the other requirement is that you have to, I think you have to renege citizenship from your other country. But
there's also a citizenship test, too, I believe.
Yeah, there is a citizenship
test. I took that test. I actually took a mock version of that test online.
So,
just by the way, but...
No, you don't have to renounce. You can be dual citizen.
Yeah. So, they usually trying to use this as like, Canada does this. And, like you said, that's a recent thing. And there were a couple of reasons why they had to do that, isn't there?
Yeah, because apparently we were having just so much of an influx that we actually couldn't support the amount of people coming in.
And keep in mind that this is what we're talking about, Canadian standards here.
Yeah,
because Canada, the standards of what they have in Canada and what we have in the U.S. are different. Because for one thing, Canada only has so much livable space.
Yeah.
Most of it is basically a frozen hellscape.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why the majority of Canada's citizens live near our border. It's because they need the warmth.
Though in time, the rest will become available pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's going like this, yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're in the United States. We have plenty of room. In fact, there are areas of the country that are currently depopulating.
Yeah.
So, it's apples and oranges, man.
Yeah.
And even then, Canada's standards are actually not terribly stringent in the long run. So, You know, and also I'm pretty sure that the Canadian government is willing to give you is willing to actually help you in the process a little bit.
A little bit, and there's
whereas the American process basically is sink or swim.
Yeah. Plus, it's also on a case by case basis.
Because yeah.
They, you know, actually look at the paperwork and, you know, interact with the person trying to immigrate.
Yeah.
Which is a concept that, I don't know, might work over there.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like that whole must be debt-free thing often gets waived.
Mm-hmm.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. They, so, yeah. So, like, I mean, functionally, not that terribly different from the U.S., mm-hmm. except they actually try to help, except they actually are with you along the way and are actually helping you.
Yeah.
Whereas in the U.S., you're basically just sink or swim.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Well, we can't do that.
Hmm.
Mm-mm. 'Cause we're America. But anyway. So next up on the Trump dump, on top of other things, the Trump administration has also decided that you want to weaken application of the Endangered Species Act.
Oh, yeah.
So if a bald eagle ends up dying, going extinct in your lifetime, you know who to blame.
Yeah, can't let the endangered species get in the way of business.
Nope.
That's basically what this is doing here. So it's going to expand the administration's rewrite of the U.S. environmental laws. Let's see. And the enforcement changes, officials for the first time will be able to publicly attach a cost to saving an animal or plant. Blanket protections for creatures newly listed as threatened will be removed. Among several other changes, the action could allow the government to disregard the possible impact of climate change, which conservative groups call a major and growing threat to wildlife.
Mm.
Conservation groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross is commenting on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make any sense. Fits squarely. He says it fits squarely within the president's mandate of easing the regulatory burden of the American public. Without sacrificing our species protection and recovery goals.
But
yeah, let's see.
It does exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. One of the changes includes allowing the federal government to raise in the decision-making process the possible economic cost of listing a species. That's even though Congress has stipulated the economic costs not be a factor in deciding whether to protect an animal. The prohibition was meant to ensure that the logging industry, for example, would not be able to push to block protections for a forest-dwelling animal on economic grounds. And yeah, it's a lot of stuff like that. Like, hey, you know, this is a good drilling area for oil.
Mm.
Well, fuck the fish that are here.
You know, I sometimes ask myself, like, what fucking timeline are we in?
Mm.
And I just realized what timeline we're in now.
Mm.
We're in the fucking Captain Planet timeline.
Mm. Yeah, we probably are.
Well, that is taking his fucking time.
Yeah. Somebody find some weird little Indian kid and that one white chick from Ukraine. Mm. We need to form up Captain Planet. We need to do it quick.
Yeah.
And nobody gets a ring with heart. That was the dumbest fucking thing on that show.
Mm.
But anyway. All right. And in more trumped up news. This week, we at Wall Street, the Dow Jones plummeted for just about, what was it, like two straight weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we got an inverted yield curve, which is basically the giant red flag that says, hey, y'all about to have a recession.
Yeah, so the inverted yield curve is basically, so the U.S. Treasury has their loans or whatever the CD yields.
Mm-hmm.
They've got 2-year, 5-year, 10, 30 years, and a 3-month offer. So basically the cost for getting a 2-year CD is cheaper than or has a higher interest rate than the 10-year.
Yep.
Which basically means it's better to get a 2-year CD compared to a longer term one, which is typically not how that works.
Mm.
And so that is kind of a early sign, like, all right, some shit's likely to go down.
Yeah.
It's not going to be as fast as you might think. I think the previous times this happened, it's been like a good 2 years. The one for the 2008 financial crisis happened in, I think, late 2005.
Yeah.
I think also the web, the big web crisis in 2001. That happened a good bit earlier, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not going to be something that happens now or this year or even next year. It's probably going to be starting whoever the next president would be.
Yeah.
It'll be the first thing they have to on their plate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, if we go by the great sort of trend we're in with presidents, the economy will go to shit, and then it'll be the next Democratic president's job to fix everything.
Yeah.
And yet, they'll still blame him for it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Trump took credit for this economy, how good it was for so long.
Yeah.
You know, it's all Obama getting things
back in order.
Gear.
Yeah. And it's going to shit on his watch. So
it was just a testament of how good a job they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it lasted that long.
But,
yeah, maybe hold off on getting your houses and such.
Yeah.
To see what goes on with all this.
Maybe start a rainy day fund.
Yeah.
You know?
Get your savings funds going.
Start squirreling some money away somewhere.
In a different country, maybe.
Yeah.
Do it like the corporations.
Mm.
Just
wouldn't be entirely a bad idea to buy a gold coin or two.
Yeah.
And
probably still stay away from Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah. Stay away from Bitcoin.
Mm.
And what else? You might want to start hoarding the gasoline.
Hmm. And bottle caps.
And bottle caps.
Hmm.
Maybe the one good investment would be an electronic car, e-car.
Yeah, yeah. Electric car.
Because the sooner you can get off of needing gas, the cheaper that'll be for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just be a little increase in your electricity bill, but
yeah.
Otherwise,
you can also invest in a bicycle. Mm-hmm. Those are also good.
Yeah, if you got a short commute.
Short commute.
Yeah.
Mm. Ain't going 20 miles on a bike.
No.
Oh, electric bike. Good.
Get a scooter.
Mm.
Yeah, get a moped or something.
Yeah.
Get a scooter and get on the highway, see how that goes.
Mm. Yeah. But, so it's pretty much a done deal at this point. What could, the one thing that could... the one thing that could perchance offset it is if the wealthy 1% started burning through their money.
Mm.
But that's not going to happen. No. So,
guillotine time?
Last warfare. Catch
there.
It. All right. So, next up. John Hickenlooper has officially ended his 2020 presidential race bid.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah, he was a Colorado governor.
Mm-hmm.
Who did a pretty good job for what he was. He did not have, like, a great following or anything like that.
No.
He was never going to be, like, a threat unless just something amazing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, I can go back to working in Colorado.
And getting high.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much everything you can say about that.
Yes, pretty much.
He's taught, apparently he's thinking about doing a Senate bid, which I'm like, okay, go for that.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Definitely got a better chance there.
Yeah.
All right, next story. Kurt Schilling. Yeah, he's pretty much bit pissed off both the sports world and the gaming world.
Hmm.
Pretty much in equal parts. Kurt Schilling was once a acclaimed baseball player.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who then tried to become a game developer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. He started. God, I forgot what was the name of the company.
38 Studios.
38 Studios, because that was his number.
His jersey number.
Yeah.
His jersey number. And the game they put out was Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, which I want to make clear.
Solid game.
Really solid game. It's a good game. If you find a used copy of it somewhere, get it and play it. It's actually really good. Yeah. Far better than it actually has any right to be honest.
Yeah. Now, the problem is it was a setup for an MMO.
Yeah, it was a setup for a MMORPG.
The people behind WoW and Elder Scrolls and other big talents working on it.
And they also had the likes of R.A. Salvatore to write, you know, the
narrative
lore, the game's lore. They had Todd McFarlane come in to do the art direction. It was pretty much like...
Sure, why not have him there?
Yeah.
And, I mean, for the record, what they produced was really good.
Yeah.
But the problem was, is, again, they were supposed to use this as the basis for an MMO, and they ended up conning the state of Rhode Island out of millions of dollars to invest into this company.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, the monetary plans that they had, unfortunately, could not match the sales.
Yeah, they were giving out bonuses and such, like they had a never-ending supply of money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not have that.
Yeah.
Nope.
So it was really nice while it was going well, but then it went really bad.
Yeah.
Once the money ran out.
There's a great episode of What Happened on YouTube about Kingdom of Amalur Reckoning, so I recommend you check that out.
Yeah. Again, good game! Kurt Schilling is a terrible person.
Yeah.
And Mayor of America is about to find out how terrible a person he is, because he announced this week that he's considering a run for Congress in Arizona.
Yeah, the one place he hasn't burned bridges just yet.
Yeah.
Because the people of Boston hate him, Massachusetts, Rhode Island hates him. Lots of people hating him. Mm. So
give it 3 months, Arizona will hate him too.
He worked at ESPN for a while.
Mm. Yeah,
got fired there because he was very much
a colossal spreading his asshole,
spreading his transphobic opinions all over Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Complained that they had a bias against him. It's like, no, they don't want assholes on their network.
Yeah.
Especially people that are transphobic and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
think he actually tried to go on the internet after that to try and get some sympathy, and the internet was not having it.
Yeah, they were just like, no, dude.
Yeah, I think now he's like a conservative podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
Some shit like that. Mm. I probably look it up. See what his Wikipedia page says.
Mm. Should just say giant douche.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm not seeing that yet, but he's a radio personality on Howie Carr Radio.
Mm.
I do a Saturday morning politics and sports show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also on Breitbart, so.
Yeah, of course.
That's pretty. Yeah, Breitbart is pretty much the drain trap of. Of far-right conservative garbage.
Yep.
It's the point where you don't quite cross over into full-on neo-Nazism.
Yeah.
But you're close.
Just doing PR.
But you'll look the other way while it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
You're the PR manager for Nazis.
Yeah. Anyway. Next up, and we're now more or less out of the
serious
part of the show. Oscar Mayer Oscar Mayer put out a hot dog ice cream sandwich. It is a real thing that you can buy in stores.
You know what the name of it is?
I don't know, and I kind of don't want to know, but go ahead.
It's Ice Dog Sandwich.
I fucking hate these people.
Yeah, so it has candied hot dog bits in it with the hot dog sweet cream. The other half of the bar is spicy Dijon gelato with a cookie bun on it.
Somebody thought this was a good idea.
Yeah, it's out now in New York. They have a repainted Wienermobile. We're driving around, giving them out. And I guess they also, the brand also announced the news on Twitter earlier this month alongside one of those Twitter polls. I got 5,000 votes. And 72% of people politely pass on the idea of consuming an ice dog sandwich.
It's like, no.
Hell to the no.
Yeah.
I want to say that they may have gotten the idea from Hillshire Farms, who put out that, what was it? It was like a breakfast corn dog. It was like a breakfast sausage wrapped in like a blueberry pancake or something.
Yeah.
That sounds fine.
That's
like those are breakfast things.
Yeah, they go together.
Yeah. They go together. This doesn't.
Different.
Yeah, so they're handing out these ice dogs out for free for the week if you find the Wienermobile driving around.
Yeah.
I guess they are also doing, like, DMs. They were taking, like, requests for them for free, but they obviously got swamped with them. So they're going to do a raffle on, morbid. I guess they did the other day.
There's a lot of people who are morbidly curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is there any other way to be curious about it?
No, not really.
Yeah, so they also got a bunch of tweets here from people that have reservations about the whole thing. So it seems like their embed is not showing it correctly, like it was earlier. Maybe I have to don't run on this page. Mm. See what that does. Nope. Okay. Well, that went poor.
It's broken.
Okay.
All right. Their embed broke, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So, next up. They recently did a study in the Arctic analyzing some of the snow that's there, and those are our next two stories. First, they did a study in the Arctic, and when they went through the snow, they found plastic.
Yeah, microscopic particles of plastic. 10,000 of them per
liter. Should be a giant red flag, but...
Yep. In a region that's supposed to be pretty much untouched by humans.
Mm.
It's like, oh, there... You got your shit all over the place.
Yeah, and plastic would have had to have, well, basically atomized somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And ended up turning into snow.
That's... Yep. I basically used some really high-tech equipment for this. A dessert spoon in a flask.
Okay.
They went to the Svalbard Islands, mm-hmm. As well as a couple places in Germany and Switzerland.
Mm.
And yeah, in the laboratory, Germany's Alfred Wegener Institute, they discovered far more contaminating particles than they expected. And they were so small that it was hard to ascertain where they had come from. The majority appear to be composed of natural materials like paint, cellulose, animal fur, but there are also particles of plastic, along with fragments of rubber tires, varnish, paint, and possibly synthetic fibers. Yeah. We expect to find some contamination, the lead scientist says, but to find this many microplastics was a real shock. It's really apparent that the majority of the microplastic in the snow comes from the air, and microplastics are defined as those particles below 5 millimeters in size.
Hmm.
Yeah. So not even really all that small either.
No.
Nope.
But yeah, if you think just the oceans are the big issue with plastics, it's kind of everywhere.
Mm.
Yeah, because eventually all that ocean water kind of turns into rain at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Might want to start get on that. Which, I mean, fortunately, a lot of places were already sort of... fortunately, this is one of those issues where we're already working on it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are already kind of phasing out plastic already.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm guessing this is from the same study.
No.
Or it might have been. This is a separate study. But
this is the Antarctic.
Yeah, this is the Arctic and the Antarctic, which are apparently different places.
Yes.
Yeah, the opposite Arctic, essentially.
Yeah.
Arctic is
north.
Antarctic is down there.
Yeah. Anyway, they decided to analyze some of that snow, and they found dust from a supernova.
Yep. They found an iron isotope called iron 60, mm-hmm. which is commonly released by supernovas, but very rare on Earth. And if you don't know, isotopes are versions of elements that differ in the numbers of neutrons in their atoms.
Mm-hmm.
So in the search for elusive space dust, scientists analyzed more than 1,100 pounds of surface snow. They gather from a high-altitude region of Antarctica near the German Conan Station. In that location, the snow would be mostly free of contamination from terrestrial dust. Researchers reported a new study. They sent that still-frozen snow to a lab in Munich, where it was melted and filtered to isolate dust particles that contained traces of material from space. The scientists examined the incinerated dust using an accelerator mass spectrometer. They detected the rare iron-60 isotope relic of an ancient supernova. And kind of the surprise here is this is not that old. Mm. I think it's been in the last like 20 years this stuff came to Earth.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows how far it came from, though. That's what we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But,
One of the two teams in this that were doing these two studies got the short end of the straw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Mm. Anyway, next up, we got some great music news. Tool. They are probably one of the best bands that currently exist and have existed for almost 20 years now.
Yeah, about that.
It's getting close.
Hmm.
But the thing about Tool is, you know, there's a lot of time between album releases with Tool,
mm-hmm.
as you probably know. They're not the type of band to put out an album every 6 months or so.
No.
There's usually years between them.
Yeah.
In fact, last I checked, they've only released 4 whole albums.
Hmm.
Or 5. And the new one is just really recently.
Yeah.
But anyway, they decided it was time to bring their stuff onto digital media, which I'm actually surprised it took that long.
Yeah.
But yeah, they put their stuff on digital media, and what that resulted in was
they made
that
all of the money.
Yeah, it meant that their entire discography is now on the top 20 of Billboard's album charts.
Yeah.
So.
I know McCabe bought the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could get the whole collection for $100.
Well, and that was my advice, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tool is awesome. And it's kind of jarring a little bit when you first listen to them.
Yeah. Because they don't really sound like any band you've heard before.
No. It's a lot to digest.
Yeah.
They roughly sort of came into existence around the time that the whole new metal thing was starting.
Yeah.
And starting out, they actually did kind of get...
Kind of lumped into that. But...
Sort of, even though, again, musically, very different from that.
Hmm.
But yeah, they are a heavy metal band that basically defies all of the tropes you associate with heavy metal.
Yeah.
Like, in just about every way you can possibly think of.
Hmm.
Odd time signatures... The lead singer's voice has that weird kind of howling sort of thing to it. Fact that, you know, with the as far as the band is concerned, you know, the visual is just as important as the audio,
mm-hmm.
which is why their music videos tend to be batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a good way.
And their stage shows are awesome.
Yeah. Mm. Sober is still my personal favorite.
Hmm.
That one's a treasure. And, they had one album where they actually had, what's his name on there? Comedian. Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
Yes, Bill Hicks is on one of their albums.
That's
the kind of prestige that only Tool can get. Also, they tend to, like, do a lot of work with the packaging on their albums.
Yeah, that's... One of the reasons that it's taken so long to get to get to digital, because they believe that, you know, if you're going to buy a CD from them, you should get something for your money.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, also, you get a good album, but you also get all this other stuff that goes with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like feelies, you know, the stuff that you used to get when you got a PC game.
Right.
So go out on YouTube, listen to them. They're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It will become your favorite band. Mm. They have the same effect on me the way that Primus has.
Yeah.
In that suddenly there's only 2 categories of music. Music that is Primus and music that is not Primus.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. That's pretty fair.
All right. Well, next up, Tumblr. Still no porn. But you do remember Tumblr, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It died basically... How long has it been now?
Well, it's technically hasn't died, it's just kind of...
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Basically, once they decided the no porn rule, Tumblr basically... Well, tumbled.
Yeah. Yes.
Very fast. Mm. And so it was eventually sold off to Verizon for, what was it, $2 billion or something?
I'm surprised it was worth that.
Yeah.
It was something like...
$1.1 billion to Yahoo.
To Yahoo. Yeah. And
I'm surprised Yahoo had $1 billion.
Yeah, which then went to Verizon.
For about $300 million.
Yeah, and this week Verizon sold Tumblr to WordPress. Mm-hmm. Well, specifically the owner of WordPress, Automattic.
Yeah.
For about, what was it, like $3 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, something's like they got a steal on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Verizon and Yahoo basically just wasted a ton of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Verizon is fantastic.
Totally did. Yeah.
Now, if you're wondering, no, the no porn rule is still there.
Mm-hmm. Although that may change. Who knows?
Well, if Automattic likes money, it will.
Yeah.
Well, but the question is, you know, now what?
Yeah. They can do a subscription like they do with WordPress.com. So that's one thing that they might do. Or, you know, there's plenty of ways to make Tumblr, like, good again.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, we'll see.
Big duh. Make Tumblr great again.
But it doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
No. No, it doesn't. Mm. Yeah, Tumblr, guys over at Automattic, you might want to rescind that no porn rule if you want money.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Next up, is this the film or television adaptation?
Television.
The television adaptation of Robert Jordan's classic The Wheel of Time saga, its main cast has finally been announced.
Yes, it has. And I know none of these actors. which would initially worry me.
Mm-hmm.
Except that when I actually look at them, they're almost all of them are dead ringers for the characters they're supposed to be playing.
Yep.
Yeah, if you look at these photos, it's like... boy. Yeah, I'm. Can you tell I'm like kind of a little bit excited about this TV series?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got. They announced it a couple of months ago that Rosamund Pike was going to be playing the lead role of Moraine Drama Dread.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, she actually is Moraine because she's a dead ringer for her. This is going to be a very interesting series. I want to see what Rafe Judkins ends up doing with it. The first series is going to kind of focus on, well, mostly on the first book. So,
there's still it's long enough to do it, so yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah. So the main five actors that they've got for the cast are, Madeline Madden is going to be playing Egwene Alvear. She's the one at the top right. And we have Marcus Rutherford as Perrin Ibarra. He's the big dude in the middle.
Yep.
And then we have Barney Harris, who I've never heard of.
Yeah.
He's the roguish dude at the top left.
Yeah.
Then we have, Zoe Robbins. She actually have heard of.
Yeah.
She's playing Nynaeve. She's the one at the
lower. Yeah, that's right. Nynaeve.
Yep.
That is 100% Nynaeve.
Exactly, Nynaeve. And she does have a last name, but they don't mention it here. It's Almira.
Yeah.
And finally, Joshua Stradowski is going to be playing Randall Thor. He's the one to the lower left.
Yep. That's Rand. Exactly how I imagine him to look.
Yeah. So,
they pretty much killed this casting, pretty much.
Exactly. So. I'm very excited, and now I'm hearing that the show is going to be coming out in 2021, so that's a long time to wait. An entire year, but, you know, if they're being as careful with it as it looks like they are, then it's going to be worth it. So,
I'm excited. All right, next up in book news, J.D. Salinger. Salinger passed away a few years ago, and... He was also famous for being, like, super reclusive.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably, like, one of America's first, I guess you would call, cult writers.
Right.
Because of the lengths he went to his anonymity and the fact that his output was sparse, it gives it a kind of credence that a lot of writers of his era really didn't have. And recently they announced this week that all of his books are going digital for the first time. Now, for the record, Salinger only published about 5 books in his lifetime.
Yeah, but one of them was The Catcher in the Rye.
The Catcher in the Rye, which was his only novel that he ever published. But God, what a hell of a book, too. That book has had an insane impact on world pop culture. And also inspired a couple of serial killers for one reason or another. But he was probably more than anything a prolific short story author. So after Catcher in the Rye, a couple years later, he published 9 stories, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a collection of 9 stories. In 1961, he published a duo of novellas called Franny and Zoe. And then he wrote another book called Raise High the Roof Beam / Carpenters and Seymour, an introduction. You try and figure that title out. But again, like the last book, it was a duo of 2 novellas. And then the last book published in 2014, which I think was the year he died. They put out 3 early stories, which was a collection of the stories some of the earliest stories he had published before Catcher in the Rye was. That's pretty much the entirety of his main published output. Now, he did write several other stories that were anthologized in various anthologies throughout the years. And there's also a bunch of unpublished short stories that he also did. And there's especially still the stuff that they found in his safe after he had passed away, including apparently a story that's supposed to be a sequel to Catcher in the Rye. We're going to see what comes of that. By any chance, did any of you guys have to read A Catcher in the Rye when you were in school?
I didn't have to, but I chose to.
Yeah. It's one of those books that... would you agree, perhaps, that it's one of the first sort of what we consider a modern YA novel? Like a young adult novel? More literary bit?
I could see that.
I mean, it's a book that transcends generations. There's a reason why it's basically never been out of print. But, you know, it establishes a lot of tropes that a lot of modern, you know, realistic young adult fiction does. You can see stuff like The Outsiders or Confessions of a Wallflower, stuff like that. We'll see where this goes.
Hope they do a proper audio recording of this.
They'll have to.
Would be good.
Salinger's books are actually one of the handful of writers where his work actually works really well for audio. Because his writing has a cadence to it that makes it very adaptable. Anyway, next up, CBS and Viacom. Remember that they've been separate for a while?
Yeah.
Well, not anymore. They're merging back together again.
Yeah. They've settled their differences. They're getting back together for the kids.
Like MTV.
In reality, the kids have already moved out of the house. So they are just lying to themselves now.
Two giant corporations merging again.
And 2 separate Christmases anymore.
Yeah,
though it does have some good effects because the Star Trek... properties kind of had a bit of a split of rights between the two, and now it's kind of should simplify things a good bit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it also means that we have to deal with Comcast even more.
But now you got Garfield is under the same brand as like Nickelodeon and MTV and Star Trek and all that.
I think that Star Trek thing is probably going to be very helpful because having 2 separate timelines that could never meet has been a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
And confusing as all fuck.
Yeah.
And potentially helps CBS actually bulk up what's going to be in CBS All Access.
Yeah.
Where they can now have all the Viacom stuff in there.
So, yeah, this might end up being good, but I still don't like seeing huge corporations get bigger.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, CBS has, well, a whole lot of stuff. It's just it's not just their television properties. I mean, they've got a lot of online properties, like, well, Giant Bomb.
Yeah. Giant Bomb, GameSpot, CDET.
Yeah.
Game
Disney
Facts,
started an arms race, and this is just Fallout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah, all right. All right, next up in more movie television news. Universal and the people who basically created the Purge franchise, which weirdly enough is the one franchise where it actually gets better with each sequel.
It gets dumber.
It gets dumber, but it actually gets better.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had a movie in the works that was called The Hunt.
Mm.
Basically what it was is it was about a bunch of, and this is what they put in the materials, quote-unquote, deplorables, who are basically stranded in the middle of the wilderness and are being hunted by rich people. Basically, it's yet another adaptation of Richard Connell's The Most Dangerous Game, which is like, that's like up there with like Murder on the Orient Express and the complete canon of Shakespeare for the most fucking adapted piece of fiction ever.
Yeah.
But then the El Paso and Dayton shootings happened, which kind of put a damper on a lot of things. But what basically a lot of people blaming really canned it was when Donald Trump or whoever it is that runs his Twitter account got a hold of it and complained about it. And so Universal basically shelved the project indefinitely.
Yeah.
Moral panic.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole weird thing is like when they talk about like, oh, we're going to push the release of this thing, or we're going to push this event so it's not as close to these things, the shootings happening. It's like, there's just going to be some happening when this happens.
Yeah. There's
going to be another shooting. It's not, like, if that's your concern, it's like, don't hold the event.
Hmm.
Like, effectively, that's how bad it's gotten.
Yeah.
Also, if you remember reading the materials, the deplorables are supposed to be the good guys.
Mm.
Remember? They're the ones being hunted. So, again.
Asshole rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's an allegory in there about not trusting the rich.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, that's what the Purge is already, so.
Yeah,
these people don't think that far.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And finally, the last story of the night. We got a trailer for Netflix's next biopic, Dolemite Is My Name. Dolemite. Yep. You know, blaxploitation is one of those film genres that it's a combination of a handful of diamonds in the rough, and then there's a bunch of shit.
Yes.
Some of which is on the border of being really, really fucking racist.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the fact that at least a good chunk of it was actually written and produced by African Americans.
Yeah.
But this particular film is about Rudy Ray Moore. Rudy Ray Moore was a comedian and a pioneer of what we now call rap music, who decided to write, direct, produce, and star in his own ultra-cheap, super-cheap blaxploitation film that was indeed called Dolemite. It is one of the most infamously bad movies you could ever watch.
Yeah.
There is a boom mic in just about every scene. Also, Rudy Ray Moore did not know how to fight. Or how to choreograph a fight, for that matter.
Yeah.
No, they kind of get into that in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, who's playing Rudy Ray Moore? Eddie Murphy.
All right.
It's like, yeah, I can dig it.
Yep. A little more.
See what he's got.
And they got a lot of good actors in there. Keegan-Michael Key, Mike Epps, Craig Robinson, Titus Burgess, Divine Joy Randolph, Wesley Snipes, like Chris Rock. There's a bunch of people in here. Snoop Dogg. Yeah, a good cast.
They basically mined the entirety of African-American figures in Hollywood, basically, to make this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're Netflix...
I mean, to be honest, if you're doing a movie about blaxploitation, you have to.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much... The genre was pretty much tailor-made and crafted specifically by the African-American community, which, to be quite frank, was not being serviced by Hollywood. I mean, let's be honest, they still kind of aren't. Mm. It was even worse back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was just no black people on the screen whatsoever. Mm. It was bad.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so...
Yeah, the director has some good pedigree to it. He did Black Snake Moan back in the day, and he's the guy doing the sequel to Coming to America.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Wait, is Eddie Murphy also in that?
Yes.
Fucking better.
Yeah, he better be.
Yeah.
Wait, they don't do... The sequel isn't like Coming to America, but the two is replaced by a number two.
Yep.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Of course.
Yeah. Low-hanging fruit!
Yeah.
Low-hanging fruit.
But, yeah, Netflix obviously spent a lot of money on this one. Yeah, you
can kind of seems like it could be... On par with the movie that's about the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, which that'd be great.
Yeah.
Which would be, except there's a big difference between Rudy Ray Moore and Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rudy Ray Moore has a smidgen of talent.
Yeah. But the movie is based on those movies. Can be really fun.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
So... I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment. If you got a question or comment, trademark, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it listened to you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can now find our little piece of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that your evil little mind can think of. Now, for that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, of this little insanity called Let's Weekend, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Biflin, and Chris Deloche, I'd like to say goodnight. Might want to start hoarding the money now.